Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browder. She is Marjorie Egan. Nearly 80 years ago, Roger Rouleau created an art form in Provincetown. The medium was leather. Now in 2014, when handmade has pretty much gone the way of the Edsel, his son Kim, who I've known for decades, by the way, continues the tradition with what he calls functional art, and it's in Provincetown. Kim Rouleau, welcome to Boston Public Radio.
Hi, thank you, Jim. Glad to be with you today.
And thank you for joining us, Kim. So I must admit, I've been lusting after Jim's gorgeous sandals this morning and lusting after the gorgeous pocketbooks that you make that I've seen online. So, Kim, tell us what your father started those many years ago that Jim talked about. Tell us about the business.
Well, what my father started really he didn't intend it necessarily to start it as a commercial enterprise, but he was a really innovative, very dynamically creative individual who had an amazing balance of being very free-thinking, artful, but also very scientific and very practical, which is not always a common combination in certain individuals. But he, what he did was he began working with a craft cooperative in Provincetown back in the 30s, who were dedicated to Grecian art forms and the revival thereof. But in his dedication was to making the sandals. That was his part of it. Other people were doing macrame and weaving and traditional Grecian dance, etc. But he got exposed to this medium of leather, and he had already been a talented artist in woodworking and sculpting and certain furniture design. But he became intrigued in leather as an expression of medium. And I think that he always felt that art had a higher form or a higher calling, rather, if it had some kind of a practical application. And so for him, functional art was in some ways had more respectability than certain forms of abstract, although he was a talented abstract artist as well. But to pin it down, he challenged himself with the idea of what would he do if he were going to create a sandal design, an open footwear design for the 20th century, because in the 30s at that point, all existing sandal or open footwear designs and applications were really ancient in their background. And he thought, well, what if he was going to make something that would be applicable for a different environment, primarily more unforgiving, harder, more urban platforms, i.e. streets and sidewalks. So he started in the 30s to work with foot doctors to design and make what he thought would be the ultimate, and I think he attained it by the time mid-50s came around, in that sling that you're seeing that Jim is sporting. And by the way, that sandal won't fit you.
No, I don't. It's a big.
So you don't have to worry, Jim, about her taking those. But in any event, no, he really was an innovator and a designer. And you can see that in the sandals, which have been imitated widely since his innovation of that in the mid-50s, that sling, as it became called. You'll see it, you know, certainly through the 60s and 70s when sandal making was very common in most cities and such.
You know, speaking of the 70s, just say when I first came to Provincetown in the 70s,
yeah,
where your father had gone, others attempted to follow. And if you were to go down Commercial Street, unlike now, and we'll get to now in a few minutes, mm-hmm, you would find dozens, if not scores, of people who were trying to emulate the great work of Roger Rouleau. Why did you decide to go into the family business, Kim?
Well, there was no decision on my part, really. It was the family business. That's what even though his and my mother's too. My mother really needs to be included much in the conversation because she was so much contrasting aspect to his raw sort of sculptural creative innovation. She did much of the assembly and finish work. But between the two of them, it was the talented artists as they were, it was difficult to make hay from your art as it often is. So they used this as their daily bread, and it was the family business. So it was something that I was expected as the eldest son, you know, where there were five siblings, It was just the way of it. You know, as I say to people, if my father had been a fisherman, then most likely I would have been on a boat. If my father had owned a grocery store, I might have been a clerk, or if he had been, et cetera, et cetera. So this was the family business, but it was also a place through which I realized when I started raising my own four kids, it was a place through which, a venue through which my folks could, in a parallel way, express and expect those things that we call life skills now about, you know, responsibility, time management, you know, all manners of things that you need to acquire to get through a life. That was being expressed in addition to the actual ability to do the work. So,
but Kim,
it wasn't really a choice.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I want you to tell people about the sandals, because they're unique. They're not just a regular leather sandal. I mean, Jim showed me his, which are
they're essentially pieces of sculpture.
They're sculpted into your foot. But they're also, they've got the orthotic thing going on there. So explain the sculpture to your foot part.
Well, and there's so much. I know that we haven't all day, but there is so much thought that goes into it. Which again, I'll take credit for the artisanship in making that effective piece of functional art, which I think is a responsible way to call that kind of a product. But there's so much thought and innovative thinking that went into it with my father's development through his time. So I was given the recipe, as I say, metaphoric to the food. I'll take credit for cooking it well. So much was given to me in the subtleties of the recipe. It is functional. It is art, and it is functional. And it's because of his amazing blend there again of his artistic capabilities, but also his understanding of the human foot and what it is that we want a piece of footwear to accomplish in its design. So you're seeing really a very comfortable orthopedic footbed under which on which the foot can comfortably walk on any surface, but by the same, except water, I think so far hasn't worked. But overall, it is sculptural because it accommodates the human form. When people were raving about this sandal, the slings, back when he developed them early on, people said, you know, Roger, it's such a beautiful, graceful design. And he somewhat cutely would say, it has to be. The body designed it.
I said to you after I put them on the other day, it feels like it becomes part of your foot. Not on your foot, but
right.
Part of your foot.
Can you
step back?
Did you stick your foot in a thing of cement, or how did you get this done?
No.
Go ahead, Kim.
Much simpler than that. We still use in the same traditions that he developed years ago. It's done from a two-dimensional rendering. I have people stand on a certain kind of cardboard. I take an outline of their foot, measuring certain places, a lot of the important joint structures and landmarks of the skeletal aspects of the foot, the arch structure, all of that stuff. And from that two-dimensional rendering, I can complete the sandal.
You know, Kim, as I'm thinking about this, as I'm looking at it, and beyond the fact that there's great functionality, as Marjorie said, they really are beautiful. What drives me crazy is someone who saw the old Provincetown and then saw the interim Provincetown, and in some ways it's come back. I love the place. But why is it that people decide that knockoffs, cheap renderings of things that people – I don't just mean sandals. I mean any sort of art, or whether it's functional or not – why did that catch hold? Why did this notion of second-class stuff take hold, and are we beginning to go back in the other direction? Do you know what I mean?
I think I do. I don't know if we're going back to the other direction, although I think that the response to the Rillo Sandal Shop returning to Provincetown, you know, it's been active and vibrant in where we've been in Vermont for these years, but now returning to Provincetown, which was its inception point, maybe the reaction that it is getting, the return is getting, is an indicator that there is the return to an appreciation of a handmade item. But I think that it's easy to get away with. We talked a little bit about this actually when you were coming for the fitting. Is that I think that the standards have been lowered to such a degree, and I was trying to reach for certain translations and certain metaphors in other product. But I think that when if there's a real lack, a real dearth of quality to anything, whether it's music or food or I guess you could go on, I think that the people, in a sense, don't know what they're missing. There's been people that have copied the Rillo Sling since the 60s, certainly. But it's amazing to see how much actually is missed in the finer points.
Well, it's not just the finer points. Do share with us, right before I saw you this weekend, there was a woman who was ahead of me to see you. Explain what she wanted done and why she wanted it done, Kim Rillo.
I'm trying to recall, just before...
A woman who had a pair of Rillo sandals, one from, and this is true, 1942,
right.
And one from 1955,
that's her
which
new
she
pair.
Was, still, right, her new pair, she called it, which is, she just wanted you to fix them or something, right?
And I do have those on my bench, and actually she'll be picking those up today. And you're right. If you make it right, if you take the time to make it right, to incept it properly, they will perform to that level. So, yes, from Ann Reed from New Jersey, I hope it's okay, I'm using your name, but she walked in, and she's waiting today because she's on vacation. She wants to get back into her 1955 model of Rillo sandals, which are interesting for another reason, is because I've never seen that style. I'm very familiar with the sandal styles that my parents have used. This predated the Rillo Sling, or came probably about the time Roger was finalizing it. But yeah, it's a pair of 1955 sandals. It's an unusual configuration, and finally, the slot aspect on the upper sole needs repair there. I mean, I have put new straps on over that many years. I mean, they do need tending at times. But you're talking, I mean, if we can put in a time machine window and picture 1955 and think that something that was made with real attentive care then is actually still a functional, comfortable part of someone's life. It is a jaw dropper, really.
That's what you're going to say when I come to see you in 59 years, Kim Rillo. Hey, Kim, in addition to finding you on the wharf at this great little new shop you have in Provincetown, what's the website? How do people get in touch with you?
The website is purely, it's www.rilloleather, spelled RILLEAULEATHER, rilloleather.com. And that has the information that will lead them to a number of the products. There's a number of things that I'm doing that aren't listed there, but for now, it's a way to make contact. There's email, there's phone numbers, etc.
Great. Great artist and great person. Kim, it's great to talk
to you. Yeah, one last very, very quick thing. This is a yes or no, Kim. Are you making a living doing this?
It's actually been a bit challenging being away, but now coming back, I think that Woodstock, Vermont was not the best venue. It was a great venue for my kids and their education, etc. That's one of the reasons we were incepted to move. But I'm not spending winters in Boca Raton.
Okay. Kim, thank you very much for
Kim,
being
great
here.
Great to talk to you.
Likewise.
Kim Rillo is a leather artisan, and he carries on his father's tradition at Rillo Leather, which is based in Vermont. And as Jim said, until the fall, you can visit them on the wharf in Provincetown. And the website is rilloleather.com. RILLEAU leather.com.